Thank you. So this afternoon I'm going to talk about perhaps some concepts that don't seem very related, but I think they're pretty much related. First of all, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the concept of soil security and explain to you why in pursuit of soil security we would want global soil mapping and particularly assessment. So I think these two things go together pretty well. So if you want to know more about soil security, because I've got very little time to go into it, there is this paper, and which was published recently in one of these soil science journals. So, soil security is a concept that's similar to other things that we talk about as global issues, like food security and water security and climate change and human health and biodiversity. And I'm suggesting that soil security is the same kind of issue. It has the same kind of importance. And more than that, it actually helps to solve some of the problems related to these other six issues. So that's why we need soil security. We define it, you know, people talk about food security having certain dimensions. We define soil security by these dimensions, the first two being around the biophysical capability, properties of the soil, and how and what condition they are now. What can we expect soil to do? How can we expect soil to function? That's capability. Condition is perhaps how is that capability perhaps shifted relative to some reference point? It's measured by properties that are more dynamic, and it's a combination of capability and condition that overall would give you performance. And capital, when we look at soil security, we need to value the soil. We need the economic value of the soil asset, both for its production and its provision of other services, other functions. I think this is very important, because until we put these economic values in things, society will not value soil for all in the correct way, I believe. The fourth one is around connectivity. How connected are you to the soil? How connected is the soil to you? So all these connections. Do the people who manage the soil understand its capability and condition? Can they manage it to optimum performance? Does the person on the street understand where his food comes from, what kind of soil, and therefore do they have that social connection to the soil and therefore value it? The more those connections exist, the more secure soil is in the world. And finally, codification. Is there appropriate governance or regulation or public and private sector arrangements to secure soil? This is all about the structures and instruments to support the people who are connected to the soil. And that's a very important area. This is the policy area. To make a soil secure, you need all of these in place and all of these to be functional. It's just not about soil quality, which is soil condition. It's about all of these things together being operational. Now, what's the significance in global soil mapping? Well, obviously, it's more likely to be related to the biophysical conditions. When we come on to global soil mapping, we have a particular project that we have been working on, several people in the room here. It's a project that has very detailed specifications. It's a digital soil mapping project. It has a set of properties which we think are very useful for obviously agronomic functions, but other functions as well. It has a certain way of doing harmonization of data using a particular model. It deals with the uncertainty of the information and the uncertainty of the outputs, and in its best manifestation, it's a bottom-up model. In other words, it's based on countries coming together with their data rather than somebody from the top doing it from above. That last one is probably, depending on the various capacities around the world, is probably one of the more problematic aspects of what we're trying to do. In terms of the five C's of soil security, if we prioritise them by the impact that global soil map could make on their evaluation, so now we've got these five C's, we need to be able to evaluate them to say whether the soil security is improving or getting worse. It's probably the global soil map product is very useful for evaluating capability, some degree condition, and also for the capital evaluation. So I do think, and in the end, when this is all worked out, it will help with public policy. But I think we've got the three there. So we see global soil map driving capability, condition, capital, feeding into soil security, which then feeds to all these other global issues. Now let me just talk about a couple of examples of what people have been doing in relation to this. And some of the examples, I may be focusing a bit more in the agricultural area because of the fact that this is an agronomy group. So we've just completed in Australia the Soil and Landscape Grid of Australia, which is part of the Global Soil Map effort. It's a 100 metre or more specifically a 3 arc second grid of Australia, so there's several billion pixels on there. It has all of the 10 soil properties at fixed depths, all within certainties. And it was made by using all our point data and a lot of our mapping data. And it was made from two different evidence bases, the point data and the mapping data, and coalescing the two. And it'll be available in Google. It'll be online at the end of the month, but it's available in various sources. This is just the Google Earth. This is clay content across the continent, and you can zoom in to that's one of our university farms there, which is about that farm there is about 1,000 hectares. So, and you can get into real detail in there. And this is another one. This is the state of Tasmania. And I should say this project, I would say by doing this project, Australia has moved 25 years in 1 year, and our capacity in this area has increased enormously across all the states to do this kind of work. And now this is Tasmania, and this work is now being used in Tasmania for doing enterprise suitability analysis for new irrigation schemes. You see, global warming isn't all bad. Tasmania is getting warmer. They have many more options about what they can grow, and now they're putting in the irrigation schemes to do that. They have lots of water there. And now this kind of data at 100-metre resolution is being used to do enterprise suitability for about 20 different crops and figuring out what they should be doing in these new irrigation areas. So you get... So we're looking at, I just picked this one out because it's about subsoil pH, and one of the biggest problems you have, I think, is if you've got acidic subsoil, it's hard to fix. So that would be an important agronomic criterion. So that's the subsoil pH, and we've got the 90% prediction intervals for that, and we can... So that's actually being used at the moment, and there are many properties like phosphorus and nitrogen and clay and silt and sand and carbon and bulk density are all in there as a data set being generated by global soil map specifications. This is another project that I've been working on from an Australian government. This is the equivalent of NSF. Basically, it's global space-time soil carbon. So we have soil carbon global soil map, but one of the problems with soil carbon is it is dynamic. It's more dynamic than clay content, so you have to take time into account. And this is partly just trying to investigate what the time effect is and how we're going to manage soil carbon eventually in our global soil map. Do we need to standardise it to a particular time, or do we need to do the most recent time? So this is a work in progress. This is the data that we've collected for this project. We've got, and there are many collaborators, and I haven't mentioned them here, but when we publish the paper, their names will be there. That's what you do with collaborators. So we have about 65,000 sites where we've got the date, and another 31,000 where we don't, so across the world. But you can see this is not a very easy data set because it's very lumpy in space and in time. So it's very hard to analyse, but we're working on it. We started working on it. We're using a very simple model at the moment. The soil carbon in terms of X, Y and time is a function of the topography in X and Y and climate in X and Y, but land use has a temporal component to it, so we try to... I don't think we've got enough data. The climate hasn't changed enough for it, I think, to have enough effect on this model. So we're using a simple model. We're doing all this work in Google Earth Engine because as an exploratory work, we can process very quickly and we can get access to all their parallelization through the Earth Engine. And they have their own scripting and everything, and all the data sets we use are actually inside the Google Earth Engine. So we've been using that for this particular work. It's quite fast. So this is our organic carbon, not to 10 centimetres for 2009, that we've modelled. And we've modelled it for 2001, and we've got the differences between 2001 and 2009. It's basically controlled by the MODIS land cover classification at 1 kilometre resolution, but and we're still investigating this. But there are some funny things in those classifications. They're not as even as I'd hope, but we're still working on that. And we estimate the uncertainty. We know where the this is a 2009 date. Obviously, in some areas where you've got high carbon, or the topography is changing fast, you get quite high uncertainties in this kind of modelling approach. So there's a couple of reasons for that. This is just a quick snapshot of the tropics. If you read the literature, it says that if you're in the tropics and your organic carbon's less than 1.1%, you should be concerned, and you're doing cropping, you should be concerned about that. Now, as a soil scientist, I think that's okay. But I'd also like to know what the clay content is, because I know that you can get away with less carbon if you've got more clay and so on. So it's just a quick look-see. And we've mapped it here where the carbon's less than 1.1 and it's grassland or cropland. And we find lots of areas here where this seems to be the case. Now, don't tell anybody this, because we have no data from India for 2000 or 2009. All the data for India is from earlier, so we need to do some more updating work on this. But it's starting to give us some indications of, and you can see from a soil security point of view, from a global view, where should we be targeting? Where do we seem to have areas where we have some concerns? And of course, this is 1 kilometre resolution we did this at, but we can downscale that to 3 arcseconds using our disever algorithm that we devised for this very purpose. And this is an area in Brazil. And you can see that at 1 kilometre, it looks a bit chunky. By the time you get down to 100 metres, you can actually see the parcels of the actual landscape, which are important. And we would probably, in the future, like to get to 30 metres, because we think that can be used for site-specific management. My conclusions are... I think global soil mapping will contribute crucially to soil security planning, and I can see this evolving to annually updated monitoring of the soils of the world. So beside the modelling work in the food security area, we can do a status of the soil report, if not annually, in a much shorter time frames than we do now. Thank you. And if you want to know more about global soil security, we're having this symposium in May at Texas A&M. Thank you.